We're back.
Scott with Lloyd, sharing the burden, 102.9 FM every Tuesday morning, 10 a.m. We bring recovery, hopefully, to the world. We just went through a little bit of what our mission is all about, and we indicated we want to be able to vulnerably share, such that in such a way that others will want to vulnerably share also, and we know that that kind of sharing heals lives, and we want people healed up and feeling good about who they are and where they're going. So, Lloyd, you've mentioned many ways to give back. Your life is a great giving back scenario all by itself, just what you do. When you go back to, we'll say, like treatment house or detox place, anywhere you've spent time yourself, do you actually tell your story? I mean, do you go in and share what you've been through in the last bit, or how does that work? You know, just to give people an idea for if they had somebody they brought to a detox and someone came in to talk to them, you know, what would they be saying to them? Like, okay, you come in, you're a healthy man now, and you're giving back. What would your approach be? Would you just talk to them about, you know, coming out of it? I mean, obviously, we don't go there to give a bunch of advice because, you know, till people are ready, that's the worst thing we can do. So,
no, I share my story, you know, how it was when I was using, and you know, the spiritual awakening that came upon me, and the reasons why I stopped and such forth. I actually stripped myself down and share really some really deep things. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think it's important not to divert from the story to make it seem like unreal.
Yeah. You know, not to embellish it, sort of thing. Yeah.
Like it's you gotta be real, you're realistic.
Yeah.
And you know, people are grasping for realistic solution.
Yeah.
You know,
they want hope, don't they?
Yeah.
And you're right. If we try and fool them, you know, it's like going into all the cons, all the convicts, and all the guys in jail, and trying to con them. You know, it just doesn't work. You know, your services would not even be wanted there. Like, if we can't be real, we can't help work the solution out. So, you know, where we're talking 40,000 people in prisons in Canada alone who are in either directly or indirectly as a result of substance abuse. So, you know, we're talking 40,000 people at roughly $300 a day to keep them in the prison system. It's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of money that could go a long way to helping these folks in a recovery setting, you know, and much as the penal system tries to do its best to make things work, we know it doesn't really work. Not for the addict or the alcoholic or the abuser with a mental illness. I mean, these folk need help. They need professional help, and what they need, I find more than anything else, is support. Pure, simple support. You know, and how can we give them the support they need in the prison environment as it is today? I don't think we can do it. So, you know, a lot of money could be spent a lot better. And just doing what you and I do, you know, even just listening to people and bringing the professionals in when these people have received enough hope, you know, to go for it. It's like you said, you got to be all in. But in order to be able to make that decision, many need to be struck spiritually to have the guts, the determination, the courage to make that move, knowing full well that, I mean, you know, when you can't go an hour without something and someone tells you you're not going to do that for the rest of your life and you're gonna have a life while you do it, it's pretty hard to believe, isn't it? So, as we look ahead into 19, can you think of any experiences through 18 that stand out in any way that you're going to take, other than just being you and being honest and taking that into the new year? Have you got any you know, looking ahead, not that I believe in long-term plans or anything like that, but what's going to happen in 19? Anything?
I think I'm just going to continue where I left off this year and next year. You know, just bringing the message into the recovery houses and into the detox and trying to, you know, trying to, not convince, but trying to show people that, you know, there is a better way to live.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And this way here, I mean, if you stay on this path that you're on, you know, the ultimate prize is a coffin. You know, because I don't think there's any successful addicts.
No, I don't either. Yeah, you know. Yeah, I agree. An active addict is not a successful addict. And I still like the way, even though I'm somewhat of a person of faith, I still like the idea that alcoholics, addicts, and so on claim the label in a permanent sense only so they don't go back to, you know, what it was like to be in the midst of it. Because there is no cure for addiction. You know, it just doesn't exist. So,
well, and there's another thing, too, is... you know, we got to get the message out to people that, I mean, addiction is more than just drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, some people are born into addiction.
Exactly.
You know, and some people, it's their mothers that they're really addicted, and it's, you know, they're born into it. So, I mean, like, we go back to where people say that addiction is a choice.
I mean, no, I don't subscribe to that at all. I don't accept that it's a choice. That's just wrong for Lincoln's.
Yeah, it could be different reasons. Like medically, you could be prescribed medication to help you heal, and then you get addicted to the medication, and you know, you're running an alley, picking up and using. You know, it's something that was given to you by a doctor that you became addicted to.
Yeah. And nobody knows who has that genetic makeup, that genetic flaw, that that chemical reaction going on in their body that's going to create the addictive situation. It's different, and I mean, it's proven today. It's addiction's accepted. It's accepted by the American Medical Association as bona fide disease. You know, the way it influences people in their lives, and you know, whether we're talking emotionally, spiritually, physically, they all combine, don't they? I mean. You know, anybody coming off heroin, for instance, will tell you that you know, a lot of physical stuff's happening too. You know, it's not just something in my mind. I mean, my body's shaking and I'm sick and I'm puking and so on. It's you know, it's not a fun experience, and it's definitely full of physical aspects. It's full of emotional aspects. It's full of spiritual aspects. So this kind of a disease is so fully rounded and so powerful. Now they say in AA there that you know, cunning, baffling, and powerful, and it is. It's insidious. You don't see it, you know. And we have a friend who always says, you know, I can go into a meeting, and when we're in these meetings, we feel good. You know, we feel lifted because we're able to express ourselves without people butting in, telling us we're making mistakes or any of that kind of thing. We're free to be who we are, to express our deepest hurt, our greatest success, and no one's going to do anything about it. You know, that's a freedom that doesn't exist in the outside world. You know, so we go into that, and we're always there in the meeting. But this fellow always says, but I know, as soon as I go out to get my car, that, you know, my version of evil or Satan or the devil is doing push-ups in the parking lot waiting for me, you know. So I kind of like that idea. So there's a preparation. But had this person not decided to take the recovery lifestyle on, he wouldn't be aware of the evil doing push-ups and waiting for him in the parking lot. And, you know, thereby it's much easier to slip back into a relapse situation. So, you know, I like that, the people hang on to that. And, you know, not that God, for instance, can't take it away. I know he can, but I also know, in many respects, I've seen the abstinence given or accepted as a gift or received, whatever way you want to say they get it. I've seen it happen, but the people who don't keep living the life of recovery, like something along the lines of these 12 steps, they will more than likely relapse, whereas the person who really lives it and stays 100% in, like you're talking about, that person will keep on making it. The other one won't, most times, you know. And let's face it, there's all kinds of statistics out there. Some claim 50%, 80%, 70%, 60%. If the criterion for the measurement were the same, the results would be the same. I'm convinced across the board. If 10% make it, that's good, you know. And of the 10% who make it, that's 10% of ones who tried to make it. Of the ones who tried to make it, 100% more never tried. So we're talking, you know, a pretty slim numbers. So those who end up in a recovery lifestyle, who were able to gather by the tens, the 20s, the 50s, the hundreds, the thousands, you know, the 50,000s when they go to world conferences of some of the 12-step movements, they know that they're still a preferred special crew. And, you know, we get our power by coming together, believing, having spiritual beliefs, and then, you know, sharing them and being lifted. So great lifestyle, though, isn't it, if you hang in there?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a year later, and like I say, you're looking great, and you're going places, you're sharing the stuff. Bob, the co-founder of AA, had a prescription he gave to a fellow, and he said, you know, I can't give you anything for the addiction you have, but he wrote these three things on a pad. You know, I've said them many times. He said, this is the best thing I can do for you. And handed this fellow, you know, Dr. Bob, being a bona fide doctor, surgeon, handed this to the guy, and I said, trust God, clean house, and help others. That was the end of the story. And it, as far as I'm concerned, that still stands today. You know, trust your higher power, or whatever that means to you. Work on yourself. Do this kind of program, some other kind of program. Do it all the time. Took you 365, 24/7, every second to become like that for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. A meeting a month with a psychiatrist will take you 3 million years to catch up the amount of time you needed to get some other way. So it takes a lot of work, and we've got to change our lifestyle. I've gone on long enough. Would you like to take the floor over for a little while?
No, it's just funny that, you know, all the things... all the reasons why I became addicted, my childhood story. I told you my childhood story, you know, coming to Canada, not knowing who my mom was. I thought my grandmother was my mother until I came to Canada. And just growing up, being rejected and growing up on the streets, and that's when I started using, create my own medication. And I found that it wasn't working. You know, I found that it wasn't working, and I don't know if it does. If that's when I got a spiritual awakening, because all my friends were dying.
Yeah.
And I think that's when I got a spiritual awakening of some type to find a new way to live. And
I think you were chosen not to die. You know, so I mean, whatever that means, you know, like, and you know, and Lloyd here lost 30 people or something in the last year since he's been working on himself. You know, I mean, you think about that, friends. I mean, a lot of us don't even know 30 people. He lost 30 people who he knew, you know, and yet he saw a way out, you know, and the fact that he saw a way out, as far as I'm concerned, that's spiritually driven, because it only happens to very few, you know. My son wasn't one of them. He bit the bullet too, and he went on the same fentanyl. You know, even though it's 6 years ago, it's the same stuff. You know, and killing people left, right, and center. And even as Lloyd said, he talked to somebody recently who, he just did the progressive thing as an addict, and eventually was selling drugs and eventually selling fentanyl, because that's what's selling, and if you're in that game, that's probably what you're going to sell. And but we can say to people like that, you know, like you know, people like you killed a whole bunch of my friends, and in my case killed my son, you know. And I've said that eye to eye, face to face with people in jail, and that has impact, and that that forces them into the hope syndrome. You know, either they're going to pull a pin or they're going to find hope and find something worthwhile, because no one really wants to go around killing young people. And that's what we're doing, you know, with that stuff. So serious, serious. But back to you for a sec, Lloyd, when you, you know, got off the plane or whatever in Canada at 9, and half of, at least, of what had abandoned you, your mom, it was now bringing you into a home where she had become, had become a preacher of sorts, right?
Yeah, she's a Pentecostal.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, here's a guy who was basically left, you know, and then he's drawn back into the fold, and because he doesn't fit the new fold, ends up on the street, you know, like. That whole scenario just reeks of, you know, improper today, things. You know,
even today, it still bothers me today.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I'm just lucky that I don't use drugs anymore to suppress that.
Yeah. You know, that's
now,
great. Yeah.
Now I'm going around and actually, you know, reliving that story live and. You know, I think that's my medication now.
Sharing the pain.
Sharing the burden.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely, man. Thank you, Lloyd. We didn't plan that one. Anyway, on that high note, we'll take another minute off, and I don't know what we're going to do. Jay will come up with something.
All your time to pay those bills. We'll be back here on Sharing the Burden on Whistle FM.